today, although we've got a very interesting guest this afternoon. And you'll be hearing from Lulu Love and myself when we reconvene on the third Wednesday of the month. So stay tuned to that. We've got some great shows, a little different, more detail-oriented than some of the ones we did in April. But those were also the starting show. So there you go. In any case, we are going to have a guest in half an hour. And I do apologize for the late cut-in. It's a commuting country here in California because we're coming live to you from San Francisco, California. And I got bumped on the bridge on the way in, and nobody stopped. And so now I'm going to have to fix my car because, of course, I pay for insurance so they never can use it, right? Don't we all? Well, we should have a show on that at some point. Anyway, if you'd like to call in live, you know you can, 415-550-0511. Or you can contact either one of us, any one of the three hosts, Lulu Loves at regardingsex.com. Spicy Spice at regardingsex.com, or myself, Will to Fly, that's WILTOFLY at Regarding Sex, or you can look us up on Facebook at Regarding Sex. We will be checking those throughout the show, so if you do have a question for our guests or a comment, please do give them to us. We will be, I can even forward them. If you would like to leave us a name and number, then we'll use that on the air, whatever name and number you do use. So do give us a call. And if you'd like to hear a show or you have some a story you'd like to read on the show, we do have a storytelling hour and we do have an opening this afternoon. So if you have a really great erotic piece of fiction or nonfiction and you'd like to read it live, then please do contact us. And even if we can't get you on, we will have space for you in some of the upcoming shows. In fact, I believe that one of the shows coming up here in the future will probably be just a storytelling show. It's kind of one of our favorite times. One of our favorite parts of the show, mostly because we get to stand out in the lobby, socialize, and drink while somebody else takes over the air, right? So it's like free money, kind of. In any case, I am fully engaging, especially with myself. I think self-love is important. Self-radio is a little harder. So I will probably ramble a bit more than I normally do, but you could call and take me off the air. That's the easiest way to do. 415-550-0511. If you're listening to the podcast, obviously that number only works on the first and third Wednesdays of the month from 8 to 10. Or you can come down. We do have a live sponsor. This is a live show, and a lot of our demonstrations and our fuckery, if you will, and just the comments or the readings are all done live here in the studio audience. So do come down and join us at any time. We're a listener-supported radio, so donations are greatly appreciated, but there is no cost for any of this. So come on down, watch the show live, involve yourself live, and get to meet the hosts or our featured artists. And as you well know, we've had pretty much an author almost every single show, and that's been very interesting. So today, we're actually going to have the author of a new book. Just come out, and you can get it. It's already available for download. I noticed I downloaded it on Google today, so I know it's there. And it's pretty interesting. He's got some interesting ideas. I'd like to we're going to explore some with him when he comes in. Somewhat controversial. Some of it is brilliantly simple, I think, in its assessment, but it'll be interesting to hear from the author, and you can't do that unless you pay attention and listen in after 8:30 tonight. And we will feature him for most of the hour, so you will have some chance to get in a call or ask him a question when that time comes. In any case, I want to also let you know that you can reach us if you have if you'd like to sponsor the show. We've had some interest in some of the more esoteric I almost hate the word sex, not because it's not descriptive. I mean, this is regarding sex, but facilitators, toys, playthings. Last show was 420, and we had some cannabis oil sponsors. And of course, as any of you that have listened to Mutiny Radio in the past know, we were sponsored by Alta California, which is a large medicinal marijuana company. And so, you know, we do have some interesting sidelights. In any case, I was going to bring up the, I was going to describe a little bit of the author or the book. And if any of you guys want to look it up before or kind of peruse it before you get on this show, that'd be great. I mean, I'm going to allow you to do that. And of course, I changed my my Facebook feed so that I can't find it. Right, just when you're on the air, it becomes unfindable. So just give me a second here, folks. And it's not that I won't ramble, because I am capable of long spiels of talk. But so tonight we're going to have the author of Decoding Your Kink, and you can, that is available online. You can get it. I also know that the last show we had the author of the lesbian haiku book involving cats, and I actually ran into her book featured at several bookstores in Berkeley and Oakland over this last week. So congratulations there. At least it's getting some play. But we will have Galen Faust, who is a therapist and obviously kink aware, and he'll be discussing some of his beliefs and going over some of his case studies from and why he's gotten some of the what his opinions are based on. That's actually what I'm trying to say. In any case, and I also want to thank House of Pride, which precedes this program. I have a feeling you'll end up seeing us with them in a crossover program at some point, just because they're more involved in the community, but it is part of the community. So I'd glad to hope to have them at some point here in the near future. In any case, I'm going to take a little, couple of extra musical breaks just because we're solo today and set up for the interview. But I've got a great soundtrack for you tonight, all involving sex in one way or another. So one of my theme songs and one of the songs that I'd like to make a song on, well, actually start the show with, but because I got a hit, I didn't get a chance to find it before the show tonight, but one of my favorite songs is, and we'll go over it in just a second here, is Strict Machine, which I think, is an excellent song. And if you think about it, it's actually kind of a kinky song too. Well, I think it has been somebody accused me of kinkifying everything in my life. Well, we'll have to ask Galen about that, because I have a quick wit and it generally goes to sexual topics, which is probably why I co-host the show, huh, and produce it. So it will be interesting. Spicy Spice had wanted to be here tonight, but she has indicated that she's tied up, so she won't be coming on tonight. And then the next show is probably going to be a little too packed for her. So, but she will be back on the first Wednesday of June. So the first Wednesday of June, and we already have a nice lineup. I'll wait and announce that a little bit later in the month so that you know what to expect. But it was some people that we had hoped we're going to have before the 420 show, but we couldn't do it. But they're so, but they have such a compelling story that we thought we'd kind of fit them in again later on in the summer. So, and without further ado, I want to play you a little tune.
You can let it, but it flows, you get low, don't you?
Okay. There you go. I like that. Now, for those of you who don't know what a strict machine is, it's a pulley lever. A strict machine would be like a wedge, for instance. So I don't know what strict machine they're loving, but I encourage it wholeheartedly. You know, as long as as long as you're a sentient being and it doesn't hurt you, I see no reason to. And you're old enough, but who am I to make that judgment, right? I think they're finding out now that cognitive reasoning comes later in their 20s, and yet we send our kids to war, which I think we're going to have to deal with more seriously later on, or just make it so that only 50-year-old guys go to war. It'll make the wars a lot shorter, I think. Even better, 40-year-old moms, because I'm pretty sure they'd figure out they didn't want to beat each other up pretty quickly and come out. But I digress. Again, that happens when you're a solo on the air and you have to fill a lot of time. So anyway, we do have a new Sam set coming in, and one of the nice things about Spicy being here is she does a lot of her own music. Kind of like putting her stories to music as well. So it's interesting that I mean, she's got talent, and it's interesting to see how people put that talent to use in expressing their desires, not just with sex, but in all things. So some of them tell stories with music, some of them tell stories with humor, some of them tell stories to relieve the tension in their lives. It's And it kind of all comes through when you start to do this for a while and you start to look at this and the people that you're involved with and how they got where they've got. So regarding sex is really about exploring the sexual options that are available and demystifying them and unshaming them. And that's a big part of what we're doing. We're looking for consent and shameless behavior that's appropriate. Part of being shameless is being conscious and ethical, and working out, and then just letting yourself have fun without shaming yourself or presupposing. There is an interesting story. I have children, wide range of children, but my older daughter is an adult now and married, and we had an interesting conversation a while back. And one of the things that I noticed is, and this is hard for a lot of people to fathom, but when I was just a child, too young to know what was going on, but still a child, it was illegal to be, it was actually considered a mental illness. Now, interestingly enough, it still is in some states of the United States to be gay. Nowadays, kids don't have they've kind of outgrown that, or they've grown past us. So the future president of the United States may have had a bisexual or cutting edge experience in their life expectancy. Just kind of like when Bill Clinton said he smoked a joint and didn't inhale it. You know, I guess he smoked too many cigars in his life. But then again, he put cigars to good use too, didn't he? I don't know that it was actually all that ethical at the end of it, but nobody knows what went on and how it was politicized afterwards. In any case, I do want to acknowledge at least the fact that our kids are growing up. They don't have that overhead anymore. They've come out of somebody important to me said to me yesterday, in order to have a really legitimate, edgy sexual experience, and so I want to stop and define that. What do I mean by edgy? I mean pushing your limits. Edgy could be showing up at a radio show and reading an erotic story that you wrote, or it could be having sex with 15 guys at a party all at once. It depends on your level of experience or what you're doing, but I'm glad that my friend then said, you know, you have to come out of your head to enjoy this. And so much of sex is in your head, and it should be in your head. It's your biggest sex organ is your brain. So use it, control it, capture it. In kind of my sexual proclivity, capturing somebody's mind is hugely important. That's what my turn on is, and it's kind of my propensity. But you've got to come out of your brain to it when you need to and not think about what you're doing beyond what you're doing. In other words, it's very in the moment. So, and I do know, by the way, from speed reading Galen's book, there is kind of a, he and I have a different philosophy, but it doesn't mean I'm right or not, I'm not right, but I'm looking forward to exploring how he thinks I tend to be more transcendental and he tends to be more, well, that's not entirely true. I'm kind of oversimplifying this, and he, of course, is welcome to come in on the, when we have him on the show here in the next 15 minutes, he's welcome to come in and explain more detail. But one of the things he does mention in his book is he thinks we actually ought to honor our bodies or corporeal beings a little more and not be so transcendental. I suppose if you're too one way or the other, that kind of makes sense, but it'll be interesting to ask him that question and explore it. I do know that he called in, and we got to get him set up. So again, because I'm without a co-host tonight, I'm going to play a little more music. Typically, we take breaks every 20 minutes and play a song or two, but I am actually going to do a little bit more music tonight just to give you a little break. And frankly, my son, who's not an adult yet and tends to speak his mind, whether it's appropriate, well, whether I consider it appropriate or not, would say he likes it when I stop talking. Yeah. Go figure, right? You raise the kid, you give him candy, you don't make him eat salad, and then he comes up with that gem, huh? So, but it is, you can have kids if you're not conscious when you're having sex. I also speak from experience on that point, too. Anyway, another one for you.
I'm totally addicted to bass.
Seen.
thing. Everyone's addicted to bait.
Dance with me, come on, body, dance with me, come on, body, dance with me, come on, body, dance with me, move your body, your legs a bit.
Thank you. picture, I've got your picture. I'd like a million of your aura myself. I want a doctor to take a picture so I can look at you from inside as well. You got me turning up and turning down. I'm turning in, I'm turning red, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. I'd like a million of them around myself. I want a doctor to take a picture so I can look at you from inside as well. You got me turning up and turning down. I'm turning in, I'm turning right, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. No sex, no drugs, no wine, no women, no fun, no sin, no you, no wonder it's dark. Everyone around me is a total stranger. Everyone avoids me like a cyclone ranger. Everyone. That's why I'm turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so.
We're back live, and on the phone with us from Oregon is Galen Faust. So I got that right. Are you there, Galen? Aha! We've got technical errors already. Hang on, for folks. Are you? Can you hear me? Okay. And I didn't know if I actually. Oh, I'm sorry, Galen. I don't know why. How you doing? Are you back?
Doing well.
Okay. There you go. I'm sorry, Galen, they've actually changed the board. So I got the wrong mic button up. So are you still with us?
I'm still here.
There you go. So you know what's funny is a radio show is only as good as your engineer. If he doesn't turn you on, you're not going anywhere. So go ahead and why don't we were talking a little bit off the air while we're listening to the musical break. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and your book? It's on our Facebook page for anybody that wants to click and look. And as I mentioned to the audience a little earlier, it is already available for download. I know from at least the Google Play Store.
Yeah. Well, hi everybody. This is Galen Foose. I am an author of a book, recent book called Decoding Your Kink: A Guide to Exploring, Sharing, and Enjoying Your Wildest Sexual Desires. I'm also a therapist that works with clients. I mean, you know, my focus is, you know, there's the term sex positive. I go by the current term kink positive, and how I work with people who are trying to untangle their desire, their authentic desire for, in this case, some range of kink, which is a broad palette of what that might look like, and untangle it from all the parts of them that have been afraid, resisted, were ashamed, or even traumatized around sexuality in general, let alone their particular desires. And I'm also a researcher, and I have an ongoing research project called the Discover Your Personal Erotic Myth Survey that people can take. It's up on my website, GalenFus.com, that's F-O-U-S, where you can take this 40-question survey and really start to drill down into the more detail and the richness about your fantasies. As well, I'll just throw this out since we're on what I do. I also created the Tetris portable, 3-in-1 portable dungeon suspension bondage rig and sex swing. Mm-hmm. But I'm here mostly to talk tonight about this topic of, in this program here called Regarding Sex. I understood from our talk earlier that it is about helping people kind of, how do you bridge your everyday life with your sexual life, you know, in a healthy way. Right. That's really kind of the broader topic, and that's what my mission is around those kinds of things, to bring sexuality up to the table as a legitimate topic of conversation and to treat it like any other part of the human personality.
Right. And I think a lot of what, as we discussed a little bit when we first met, even people who associate and find us good human beings compassionate, empathetic individuals have a tendency to look at the terminology we use and how we use it and how we interact with our partners and assume that, you know, it's easy for them to misrelate that. I realize that there's a nomenclature that we all use within our tribes, if you will, and this is in many ways a tribe. But it's actually not an unhealthy appetite, and it's not really about. And I don't know how you feel about it, but I know in because I've taken a lot of therapy in my life, and my therapist was quite aware. You know, there's a lot of I don't play with somebody who's not healthy mentally, physically, and emotionally. And it's not that they're not human; mm-hmm. We're all human. But that's a big part of it, and I think that's a lot of what, you know, we look at the 50 Shades of Grey, which is in reality it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. It exposed part our tribe, for instance, to the general public, but in a way that I found was very demeaning. You know, he was a sexually abused child who then took it out on, or that was the assumption that was kind of portrayed in the books.
Yeah. So. Well, those are all good points that you're bringing up there, Will. And one, kink is a complex sexual territory that's been little really explored and mapped, and a lot of people step into it kind of, it's kind of like pioneering, you know. Mm-hmm. 200 years ago, people went off to the wilderness and pioneered their way into these new territories and found all kinds of riches, and there were also dangers and risks. So, you know, so we're kind of at this stage now where the pioneers, the vanguard, are the ones who are out in the territory exploring alternative sexuality.
Well, what I was going to say is, I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you within our lifespans or the generations around our lifespan. But if you look at some of what, you know, some of what was evolving in the Roman Empire and the Egyptian Empire and some of the stuff that we're doing today, they openly did back then. But
yeah, so this dimension has always been there, but it's never been this running loose in the culture at large. You know, before with the internet, it just kind of caused this kind of, when I look at it, this unprecedented release of sexual eros, in which people are able to explore, you know, experiment through online, you know, anonymous ways. And then also that's led to tribes gathering, as you say, in terms of in all kinds of new sexual communities of all sorts are emerging that all have been around for a long time, but they haven't been this prevalently examined and explored. And, you know, the mass at large community is pursuing sex like never before, I think.
Right.
Before it was always like the jet set of every era, you know, we're all the decadent body, you know, wild sexual explorers. The masses were just, you know, under the church's harsh authority, at least in the European side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
But this still is emergence. This emergence now is still at a very mature, immature adolescent state. So there is a lot of recklessness and irresponsibility, and people don't know how to handle this energy yet. So that's part of what I've been working on and exploring and researching, is trying to help build some tools that people can step into these parts of themselves, these are erotic creatures almost, you know, that want to come out and play in a healthy way. You know, so our culture has pathologized sex for so long that it's hard for people not to think of that there must be some, oh, these poor souls must have been damaged in some way. And that's like you talked about with the 50 Shades of Grey guy, that's why they're into being a sadist or, you know, wanting to tie somebody up or control them, whatever. And so this is much the same as what was applied to homosexuality in the 50s forward, you know. Yeah. Oh, these poor souls, what could have made, you know, something must have happened to make them want to have sex with the wrong gender, you know, or something.
Well, so talk about, even in your own field, I brought this, I imagine you're bringing this up because I actually mentioned it at the beginning of the show. When I was a child, too young to do anything about it, but within my lifetime, homosexuality was considered a deviant mental illness.
Yeah, until 72, I think.
Yes, 72.
Manual,
yeah. It's still considered legally in some states. It still is, but the AMA actually called it a mental illness until 72. So it's a little changed since then, hasn't it?
Yeah, so, and this is like, you know, things are coming in waves. So the gay and lesbian community really led the charge in terms of taking this to a political level of where it was, you know, your civil rights are at stake. And I think the kink community is kind of going to be going down that same trail, because we will get challenged, depending on who gets elected next, especially in terms of being not made illegal. You know,
right?
In many regards,
it is illegal in many regards in some states.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's all kinds of ways people can still get in trouble, and with the law, even if they're consensually agreeing to do something, that's totally silly. But I think the important point here is that this is not a pathology. This is an innate, inherent, lifelong sexual framework that someone has, just like if someone is a homosexual or a lesbian or a transgender or whatever. It's not like a pathology. It is simply an innate dimension of Eros that we really haven't allowed, generally, as the mainstream culture hasn't allowed to have that kind of diversity going on.
And I think one of the analogies I like to look at is, I have many friends, they've been on the show, who are storytellers. They spin a yarn, it takes you on a journey, and it sucks you in. Well, I have known in my life several pathological, what I call pathological liars, or con men and women, who will then take a story, make it real, make you feel it, and then take advantage of you. What, it doesn't make one right or the other wrong. They're both stories. It's I think more or less the intent, the consciousness.
So that's what I teach too. Is I have a practices, and this is where I help work with people on, is people who want to take their sexuality out of this, out of the shadows, you know, out of their dishonesty, out of their ways they've hidden it, snuck it, not been straight up with it, and who want to participate with it in a conscious, healthy way. That means transparency. That means clear negotiation. You know, there's no perfection. I mean, people can still make errors along the way, but I mean, it's with the intention, I think, as you mentioned, to, you know, engage someone in a way that's, you know, risk aware, consensual, negotiated, and with things built in to where you can stop, adjust, you know, check in all along the path in terms of a scene. So I think it's really what's lacking, or what we have to work on more, is get these tools out there that people can use to help them bridge this. Now, there's this thing you kind of mentioned about, well, there are people who are kind of you know, moving more, doing the same thing in terms of, you know, but they're the kind of the psychopaths who are operating with kind of a mean intent versus two people who just meet and want to engage, you know, oh, I'm a dom, you're a sub, oh, wow, you like, you be tied up, oh, I like to tie up, you know, where you're just finding these mutual desires that are commendable. I mean, this is kind of what's fascinating about the way that, that the fact that people can meet another person with the same kink. And I mentioned earlier, this is kind of a pantheon. I mean, the array of kinks and fetishes that are, like, if you go on FetLife, all the different groups that are formed, and they're all populated.
Yes.
You know, it's thousands like in the gene pool, there are counterparts to every kink or fetish that has one side. The other side is already in the gene pool. And now with the internet, these, which has never happened before, and these would never have found each other hardly ever before otherwise. Now people can actually kind of discover, oh, you too, there's others like this.
Yes.
You know, especially for one of the more obscure. Well,
what a revelation that was for me. You know, when I
in
thought,
what way?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with you. I'm not really, I've mentioned parts of this on the air before, and most of my friends know it, but I knew I was different from the time I was 13 and I was aware. I never was turned on by pictures. It was the stories that found me, and I would look at a single picture and create a story, and the story would go to being stranded on an island and have complete freedom. Now, when you're, I was conscious of this stuff at like 11, 12, 13, that range. There's no framework for that. I know you. One of the things you mentioned in the book is that we used to have tribes, and the tribes would train the girls to be nubile and women, and the boys would also all have that training. And there was no shame in any of that. You showed people, like riding a bike. You show people how to do it. Another example, even in a sexual plane, is I happen to like single tails, which is essentially a bullwhip. Slightly different depending on what flavor you're doing. That is not something you want to use on somebody unless you've practiced a little bit with it, because it could do a great deal of harm. But even in the core value of just sex, we're still fighting sex education in school.
Or the lack thereof, mostly.
I don't know that I'd call it sex education. I mean, I made sure my kids were aware.
Yeah, abstinence education fear education and all that. But I want to come back to this point about that kind of segues, dovetails with this idea of sex education, the importance of it. We lack as a culture the realization that Eros switches on for many before puberty. And there's no framework for that. It's not even a lot. It's like horrifying to even that I would say that. You know, kind of for some people would totally freak out to even imply that. What am I talking about? It must be a child molester or something. But the fact is, I have this survey I mentioned earlier on the Discover Your Personal Erotic Myth. And one of the questions in there is, at what age did you first become aware of your erotic fantasies in a distinct way? And there was a, you could go from like, I think 4 to 6, there was like 19%. 7 to 9, there was another 23%. And then 10 to 12, there was another 30%. So that's kind of startling, really, from whatever the cultural norm, in the sense of, well, sex doesn't occur till puberty, or you know, sexuality doesn't occur till puberty. But the truth is now, this was a opt-in population that took the survey. It's not a random sampling, so those aren't numbers, percentages
right.
about what is the general population's ratios. But in this population that took the survey, that was a high percentage, 40% before the age of 10, basically, were in their erotic fantasies. And then when I put it further, what age did you start masturbating to those fantasies? It maybe dropped by 10%, but it was still, people were actively engaging their sexuality well before puberty. And there's nothing that we don't teach. Mostly those kids get shamed if they ever got caught, you know?
Well, don't ever do that.
Do need sex education, and we need to educate the sex educators, because even sex educational people don't really have much training in sexuality. No.
So I remember my first sexual experiences had nothing to do with with really me manipulating anything, but they were essentially wet dreams. And I remember having them as a kid. And I remember even today, I know parents that shame their kids for doing that. And, you know, it is interesting. But, you know, something else, you know, what I'm really picking from this is we associate our sexuality with our bodies. And we're divorcing it from our minds. Our minds mature at a different age. They're not fully mature until 27. So, but we allow a range of activities before then. And one of the interesting things I was talking to, actually my particular therapist, and we used to talk about, he was talking about one of the current prevalent theories of fetishes was that your brain starts to fire. You know, the sexual part of your brain starts to fire up and will fire up randomly. It's like starting from cold. And if you happen to be playing with your mother's shoe at the time that fires, you end up with a fetish associated with shoes from then on, our feet, or you can extrapolate that any way you want to. But it's an interesting theory, and I guess it has some prevalence now in within your population.
Well,
your
here's my feeling about those, a broader brushstroke on that, as I look at it, is and you mentioned this, there are stories involved here. We are actually dealing in erotic mythos. I don't look at it so much as the brain. You know, a lot of people want to apply brain chemistry. I mean, there is this idea of imprinting, you know, which has been kind of verified of, you know, at puberty, you know, a baby duck will, you know, bond with a leather boot if that's, or not at puberty, at birth, I mean, you know, and that's its mother figure from then on, you know. So it still is certainly a big mystery, you know, the science behind this stuff, and I think we're way far away from really understanding it. But what I do know, and my experiences, and what's through my 2,300 people have taken this survey, and some of the data, the points that are starting to accumulate from there, is that people who are fetish sexual, what I call fetish sexuals, who are driven by an unconscious storyline, a myth with archetypal personas that are engaging in a fantasy that has dialogue, body language, attire, props, setting, history, in a way that drives them to orgasm or other deep erotic state. So, and this is what I think is going on with a certain percentage of the gene pool anyway, who are fetishexuals. Their eros is not, you know, sex is friction, eros is myth, as I look at it. And most people have sex, and they're not really engaging the mythic component of their sexuality. But people who are fetishexuals, that's what they're driven to do. They desire and have fantasies constantly, and these are what is, you know, that's why it's now bringing into the world, and people are, you know, dressing up in leather and having all kinds of toys and props and tools. These aren't just things that people made up externally. These are coming from an internal yearning, some of which have ancient roots in them. So, I mean, there is this kind of connecting to the mythos is connecting to this kind of deeper sensibility of the unconscious, you know, things going on in the unconscious. So much more than brain science and chemistry and neuroscience stuff, I look at it as much more of this left, right, you know, there's an analytical, cognitive, scientific way to look at things, and then there's an imaginal brain that we have, too, that's symbolic, uses symbolic language to extract meaningful content and information and experience. So that's why people can go into scene with another person, and it is like going into an altered state, into an altered reality, stepping into this. You are embodying this whole different persona than you are in your everyday world. I mean, this is literally, it's not role playing as I look at it. I look at it as embodying a part of yourself that is mostly unconscious. So it's like, for instance, in vanilla sex, you know, people don't describe or talk about any of these things, but in that last minute before orgasm, suddenly their sex creature embodies, and it's like, harder, fuck me, you know, bringing in all of this whole different energy. And that's like just a soundbite from one's personal erotic myth, as I look at it. If you drill down from there, you would discover, you might discover all sorts of more, for, you know, hours of storyline that were going on.
I look at myself now, and as I let go of those shackles, as I realize I'm not some abnormal human being, and embrace who I am and do it with, I do it with, I'm conscious and try to be compassionate, and I always seek consent and mm-hmm. and connection, and I bring that up because it's a huge deal for me, any chance I can. But given that, the freedom, I never realized, for instance, I would not have ever picked me to be have any kind of sadistic tendencies. And then once you start to explore that or let that go or start to drill down, as you say, it's amazing what pops up. And then what suddenly becomes a desire or normal or something you wish normal for you or something you wish to explore. And that's another thing I think we kind of do as a society is, and one of the reasons I like the quote-unquote kink community is we tend to describe normal in very, very broad strokes, and I don't think it ever really could be that.
Well, normal is personal.
Yes, but I think we don't look at it that way. I mean, don't you see that perception? Do you?
Oh, find yeah. A lot of, so we're not taught that. We're taught that normal is external, and there's a way I'm supposed to conform. And if I want to be a good person, if I want to go to heaven, if I want to be acceptable, this is what good looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so most people do conform, but that's why it's so dangerous. The danger of that is we push our truth into shadow.
Yes.
And this is in the unconscious. It goes down and we tuck it away and we try to deny, reject, hide, you know, it. And then it doesn't go away. So, for instance, a prime example is sexuality, whatever our sexual truth looks like, you know, from like in the 50s, if you were homosexual, mm-hmm. because it was so, there was so much at risk to come out, to expose yourself, you could lose your job, your family, your friends.
Yes.
Could go to jail, you know, that people did hide it, but they didn't stop. Then they would sneak, and then they'd get caught, get busted, have a fall from grace, and receive all these things. And this is still what's going on in the culture. I think I spoke at the beginning about sexual honesty.
Yes.
You know, I don't think the problem is porn and sex addiction or having affairs and all these things. It's sexual dishonesty.
Right.
You know, I have this disorder I've created. I don't believe in the DSM. I don't really use it. I don't look at people as that kind of pigeonholable. It's really just to listen to what the person's truth are. But I have a disorder I call sexual authenticity disorder. And that is the fear of revealing or others discovering what's the depths of your sexuality really look like. And this is a prevalent issue, I think, for many people, and why so many people hide their sexuality and sneak